Today, I'm talking to Janie Coffey out of Northeast Florida and the Jacksonville St. Augustine market of Compass. Janie ranks in the top 250 agents in Florida as currently identified by Real Estate Trends and the Wall Street Journal. She has been named among the top 100 most influential people in real estate by Inman News and was ranked as a top 10 agent in Northeast Florida by the Jacksonville Business Journal. She was the number one agent during her tenure at First Coast Sotheby's International Realty. Despite her record of resounding success, she has hit major bumps in her career and has reinvented herself many times. I have known Janie for years. My motto for her is, no matter what the obstacle, Janie always comes out on top. Today, we talk about how to break out of a slump into market domination. Thanks for listening to the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. This podcast was created for real estate agents across the country to come together, sharing ideas to take your, their, and our business to the next level. All right, everybody. It's the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. And today we have the renowned Janie Coffey in Northeast Florida, which is basically everybody knows Jacksonville, St. Augustine, with Compass. Janie, thank you for coming back on the show.
Hey, Jerry. Thank you for having me.
So everybody, Janie is back on the show. You probably remember, we know, or those of you who are regular listeners, you know Janie because we met years ago. We have a lot in common. We've been on panels. We've been speaking at events together. We've masterminded together. And Janie is incredible with workshops, helping agents, leading agents to success. We've talked about transitioning, transforming your business. We've talked about getting into, you know, upping your average sales price. You're in the upper echelon of the Northeast in price point. You also are very good at the moderate price points as well. We've talked about how to do that. I mean, across the board. Today, we're going to visit on, it's successful and great and everything looks on social media for all of us and as successful we are. We all have hard times and we're not alone. And you are so great because you have so many times, like, you know how to dig deep and make lemonade out of lemons over and over again. So that's what we're going to visit with Janie today. So Janie, give us a little bit more to that, your story, and we'll go from there.
Hey, Jerry. This is one of my favorite topics. And I think it's just like reinvention. Starting from high school, college, just through things going on with my parents, I basically came out of college and was completely on my own. Made it go great. My early 20s, ended up getting married, moved to Germany, started over from scratch in Germany, then moved to Miami, started from scratch in Miami, got divorced, started from scratch, got married, the recession hit, started from scratch, got divorced again, started from scratch, moved to Northeast Florida, started from scratch, and then changed brokerages, and the way that all came together, had to start from scratch again. So I think that I have become like the world's expert of starting from scratch, starting over.
And you always come out on top. Always. Yeah.
Always comes out on top. But when you say always comes out on top, that means that there is low points. And I think that it's really important for people in this day and age, and we talk about this a lot, the perception on social media sometimes doesn't really fit the whole story of what's going on with people behind the scenes, and especially real estate professionals. I think we always have this need, inner drive, desire to put our best foot forward all the time. The danger with that to ourselves and to our fellow real estate friends is that everybody thinks that we have our sizzle together 24/7 and they end up comparing themselves to us. So when they're going through a hard time, they think they're completely alone. And when you really do talk to people behind the scenes, behind closed doors, we all always have stuff going on. That's just part of life. And sometimes it's harder than others. Different people have different hard things going on at different times. And it's easy to think, oh, well, somebody has it worse and beat ourselves up that we feel bad. But if it's feeling bad for us, that's relative. It means it is bad for us at that moment. And it's just such a struggle, like I said, because we're always comparing ourselves to others rather than just saying, okay, this is where I am right now. What do I need to do about it? What can I do about it? And take action on the things that we can take action on and let go of the things that we can't take action about, that we can't change. And I think anytime this has happened to me where I've gone through a rough spot, and like I said, I've gone through a rough spot, I think probably 10 times in my life now. There's a time where I fall down into paralysis, overwhelm, and my natural reaction when I feel paralyzed and I feel overwhelmed is to shrink my world in, pull into myself, be less social, be less open, be less just my true authentic self. I just pull in and pull in and pull in.
Yeah.
Because I think it's almost a self-preservation mechanism.
Yeah.
But then when I find a way to actually start taking action, even if it's on one little thing, where I feel like, okay, I'm going to do this one little thing, but I'm taking action. If I do that for a little while, I start to feel a little bit stronger again. And then something starts to fall into place a little.
I love what you said about, you know, we all, and I think what's important is we all have bumps. The bumps are usually like every success. I think most successes I've had have come because of a bump. You know, the bump is just what is setting you up for the success. And in that happening, I mean, that being said, I could, you know, say all these positive, great things, but I myself am like you, it's like you hit a hard time and you're like, oh God, okay. Is everything going to be okay? Cause there is no certainty. And the thing we all need is some level of everybody wants some variety, but everybody needs some level of certainty. And when you start to lose what you're comfortable with, it gets a little scary and you just want to curl up in the fetal position and just shut the world out. You said when, you know, you just figure out what can I do and you do it.
Right.
And you also said something about, I also realize what I can't change. And even if it's just the one action, this is the action I take to get momentum and to get going. Do you have an example of one time, because I know you've got a few, that would be easy for everybody to appreciate and understand, of when you were just like, take us back to that moment when you're like, okay, like, is anything ever going to work? And do I really even, is it, you know, sometimes we feel like any effort we make could potentially even take us backwards. And how do you get out of that mindset, or how do you do it anyway? And how did you know what to do and what did you do? But where's that moment? Where were you first? What was your frame of mind? Take us to that.
I'll be honest with you. One of my biggest bumps, low, whatever you want to call it, moments, times, has been actually very recently in the last 2.5 years, probably culminating like 6 months ago. Like I said, just through a lot of changes, work-related changes, I ended up having to start restart yet again, which is kind of overwhelming. And while I was simultaneously restarting, I moved into a historic home that needed complete renovation. I really started to dig deep and to build my team. I moved physically yet again within Jacksonville, both my physical home and my office, all those things kind of coming together. And I'm a single person. I live by myself. I don't, my child is grown. So all those things at one time became completely overwhelming. Really to the point where I would go to work, I would do my work stuff, I would put on my happy realtor face and do my work stuff and keep going. But then I would go home, and instead of being the social person that I typically am, I just pulled in to the fact where my friends were calling me the turtle, because I would just like pull myself in, and I didn't want to go out. I didn't want to socialize, even though I live in a very social community. And then that becomes like a spiral. It almost becomes a habit. Mm-hmm. Where everything, I personally stopped eating as well. I stopped exercising. Again, I stopped socializing. I stopped renovating my house. So I would just felt like I was living in a construction site for, a year, which meant boxes and all that stuff. And then finally, I think just like everybody, you know, sometimes if you're overweight or you have an addiction you're fighting, there becomes a moment where you're like, whoa, like this person that I'm being is not me. That's not my authentic self. I'm like living a shell version of myself. I'm living my smallest version of myself. And the person I know myself to be is this person, this alive person, this energized person, this inspiring person, this active person. And that person is, for me, was living down in these shadows of this safe, withdrawn little turtle self. And one day in the not too recent past, I just was like, enough's enough. I need to stop wallowing in this little version of myself and start to make little changes. What is the first thing when you go like to the Gary Keller's book, The One Thing? What's the one thing I can do immediately that's going to make me feel a little bit better? And then what will go from there and from there and from there? And on January 1st of this year, I felt compelled almost to kind of share that on Facebook because to the outside world, I think a lot of people didn't know that I was going through that muck and that mire. And I felt in a way that was being inauthentic to people. So I shared it and I said, hey, I've just been going through a really tough time, but it's time to pull up my big girl panties and, you know, take responsibilities for everything. And I don't want to say responsibilities for what has happened, but responsibility for inaction to change the things and responsibility for letting myself not get into a bad place, because that happens to all of us, but for allowing myself to kind of stay in that place mm-hmm. for too long and just not taking action. Because sometimes we become so, me personally, become so overwhelmed, so deer in the headlights, almost paralyzed, that it's safer to withdraw. So anyway, I shared that and the response was really kind of overwhelming from so many people that I myself thought they had their shizzle together. And they're like, I'm so glad you shared this. I've been feeling the same, or I've gone through this and I've never wanted to share with anybody because I didn't feel people would want to hear that. And it made me feel so much better. People both commented on the post as well as called me or sent personal messages. And I realized, everything that's been happening has been happening, like we talked about, happening for me, not to me, because everything that's set up now is 10,000 times better than where I was 2.5 years ago in every aspect. But I wasn't even allowing myself to see that because I was in this phase of overwhelm. And I think it's just really, really important for everybody out there. There's somebody sitting there listening to this podcast right now that I think that this message is really going to land home with, where they themselves are feeling overwhelmed. And overwhelmed and down can come from many sources. You might not be feeling on top of your physical self. And we know that when you're not feeling good about yourself physically, how that can affect you, or you might be having relationship problems, or you might be having financial struggles or family struggles. Any of those things can really get to you, and you have to be kind to yourself when you're going through it, because I think most of us are probably, if we're in real estate, we're probably type A personality.
Exactly.
And when we're feeling bad, we start to beat ourselves up for feeling bad.
And it's like Stephen Ferrara said on an interview recently, you know, with me, everything's rainbows and butterflies. And so it's like with real estate agents, it's all rainbows and butterflies. And sometimes no matter how bad it gets, it's still rainbows and butterflies until it's not. And then all of a sudden, like, no, it's really not. Like, learn from reality. You know, the compass principle. I've got them over here. Number, I forget which one it is, but it's up there. Number 3. But I want to like review what you just said for everybody, because I take notes and then bullet point it. And then so we can revisit for them, but number one, like, learn from reality. Like, at some point you wake up and go, reality, I'm not aligned with my best self. I'm not my best version of myself. What is reality? And let's learn from it. What is the one thing I can focus on and do to get to transition and grow again? Because that's what everything is. And it's about authenticity. Is this my authentic self? And it's time to put on my big girl panties. I don't say that often. It's almost awkward. but put on my big girl panties and take some responsibility, because, you know, when you're in that, you know, not so great place, there's a momentum and inertia that takes over. And breaking out of that, and in breaking out of that, if you reach out to people, even if you've been in your turtle shell, they do respond and they do relate, and you're not
weird.
They
absolutely respond.
And whatever's happening to you is happening for you, not to you. And what sums it all up in my mind is, I think about this all the time. Like, recently, you know, I like redid my whole basement, and I laugh at everybody. I have a live-in nanny. I tease her and she says, "Miss Jerry, you're ruining everything," because it was a disaster. Now it's fabulous. But when you're going through a transition in life, I mean, you changed companies, you changed a house, you did a renovation to your house. Besides the renovation to your life, it looked like a shit show, and it felt like a shit show. And you've got to get through that shit show to get to the end, to get to the reward, to get to the growth, to get to what's better. That was maybe a long summary, but does that kind of, you know, lay it out? And what is your one thing? Like, do you have your one thing that you can share from us, experience 1, 2, and 3, or what's your one thing right now? And how did you find it?
So I think everybody's one thing is always going to be different, right? And it might not be obvious. So for example, right now I am carrying a considerable amount of weight more than I'm used to in my adult life. And that came directly from these past years. I don't want to say I'm not a comfort eater, but I'm a lazy eater. I live by myself, so I'm not making these amazing meals and, you know, cooking at home and doing all this stuff. So I eat a lot of junk, or I eat a lot of stuff on the fly, or just a lot of carbs more than anything, which my body just loves them, but loves them too much. They want to hang around. But I realized my one thing to deal with that is to have the proper food in the house. And to have the proper food in the house means I need to plan ahead and make a grocery shopping list and do the grocery shopping and have the food there. And when I'm really clicking well, I'll food prep it on Sunday. So it's all done. I'll portion it all out and have it in the fridge or in the kitchen ready to go, so that through the week, I just throw it in there. Just that one thing of, it starts with making the list, but making the list, then grocery shopping, then food prepping, everything flows so much better. I'm not feeling gross because I ate something gross. I'm feeling organized. I'm feeling more in control. I'm eating better, more healthy food that gives me more energy, makes me feel better, makes me feel like I'm actually doing something healthy rather than eating something bad. So for me, I realize that's the cornerstone. If I do that, that's my one thing. If I do that, everything flows better. I sleep better at night. I wake up more energized. I have energy for exercise. I'm not ornery. But everybody has their own one thing, because we all have different things we struggle with, and we have different things we struggle with at different times in our lives. Sometimes it's relationship things or work things or team things if you're a team leader, health things, weight, financial. You have to find your cornerstone thing. You have to dig deep enough to know what is the thing. If I do that one thing, everything will flow a little better.
So if you're, so I love it. It's like, I don't know if you've met Lava Stribling yet. She was bought Compass, acquired her company recently. And they are the upper echelon of luxury real estate in New York City. I was in a meeting with her recently, and she said, anytime you decide to do something, the first thing that you need to do is have a is what did she, now I can't, now I'm drawing a blank, but have your action items, have your, you know, your checklist of here's the action items that we're going to do. So I'm going to get specific on you. I know I'm going to go backwards a little bit and tell me if you want to shift on this and answer it differently, but you know, you had a really great, program. You had several, but one was on here's how to implement a program to target listings, which was expireds, to win those listings and to get yourself into a higher price point by targeting exactly which listings you want. Now, at some point, I mean, the list you came up with and the plan you came up with is a beautiful, intricate, amazing, detailed list and very strategic and specific, and it works. How did you, because that came out of one of your transformations in life and it was a big one for you. How did you find that way? How did you find those steps? Where did it start and where did it end? That'll give us a process, I think, to kind of help everybody understand how you're so good at this.
First of all, I'm a checklist fanatic. Like, I just made this list to do this evening, just sitting here with you. Like, I run my life by checklists, by paper checklists, by the way, because I feel good if I cross them off. But so having a checklist, and I think there's even the Checklist Manifesto. I think that's a book you can read, the Checklist Manifesto.
Oh, the Checklist Manifesto. Love it.
Okay. I'm pretty sure that's a book. And if anybody wants to send it to me, please do.
we'll have show notes on Janie Coffee.
Perfect. Yeah, like the
JerryMakeupPodcast.com. And if this is a book, Rokon will find it and he will provide the link for it to everybody.
Okay,
so
perfect.
Everybody take note if you're not already on the blog page where that lives. So anyway.
So I realized, I mean, the whole going after luxury expireds came out of necessity. I was brand new in a brand new market, didn't know a person, didn't know the areas, when I say didn't know a person, I didn't, other than the people who worked with me at the brokerage, that's it. I didn't know anybody. And I realized I just had to come at it strong. So what I did was I created an expired program to go after high-end, like super luxury expireds in my market. And I was very strategic about that because so many people are chasing the mid price point expired that it's ridiculous. Like, and I just wasn't interested in competing at that level, but a lot fewer chase the super high end expireds. And also they expire themselves much more frequently, meaning a high end property might go through 2, 3, 4 expirations here before it actually sells. So the longer a house was on the market, the more excited I got about it because it was the agents prior to me had chipped them away about their expectations of the market and price and everything like that. So what I did was I realized, first of all, I didn't want to be calling the expireds, especially when I was brand new to the market, because I didn't want to be on the phone with somebody and them asking me what I sold in the market. So I knew I didn't want to be calling. Plus I did the research. And I realized that the higher end, if they actually did expire, they took a longer time to come back to the market than a lower end property. Lower end property, if it actually did expire, would come back on much quicker. So I knew I had a little bit of time to get in front of them with materials to show how I was different from everybody else. I also knew that people respond differently to different kind of media. So I did an entire combination of a really, hold on, let me see. I actually have some materials here to show you. I can show you some stuff. A really nice first day package where I had these little binders. I don't know if you can see, but our team name is embossed on them. So the first day they get a really nice package sent to them. Explaining how we're expired specialists, remarketing specialists. And then I alternated between postcards and my black envelopes, letters, alternated between letters and postcards. And then if I could find their emails, And then a few other things. But I did it alternating like that because some people respond to written letters and the information in a written letter. Some people respond better to just a postcard.
Yeah.
Some people will just toss that in the mail, I mean, in the trash, but they're reading their emails. So I did this whole alternating postcard, letter, email, occasional text kind of thing. And in the end, that action program was about a 45-point action program, and it works really well. But it was a very methodical thing of trying to get in front of people, explaining how you're different, explaining how you can solve the problems they've been having, because expires, we all know what problems they're having. They're frustrated. They've probably lost out on a house. They don't want to continue to have to keep their house, you know, in tip-top shape. They don't like always being worried they're going to be bothered on the weekend. You know the drill. So
yeah.
The agent didn't communicate with them. So it was being very thoughtful in the front end rather than just scattershot, you know, just throw everything at the wall. It was a very methodical plan. Since then, I've actually taken it a few steps further, and now I have an action plan for equestrian listings. I have an action plan for historic listings. I have an action plan for boutique commercial listings. Those are my three kind of specialties. So rather than just generic content, now they get the whole action plan very tailored specifically to the type of property they're selling. So if it's an equestrian property, they're only getting stuff about other equestrian properties I've sold. If it's a historic property, they're only getting stuff about historic properties I've sold. If it's a uber luxury, they're only getting uber luxury properties that I've sold, expired properties that had not sold with somebody else, and then tell the story about how we were able to achieve that.
So I have so many questions. Number one, I just want to like revisit. So notice how everybody, she talked about like, anytime you have a problem, you've got to like, look at your situation, look at the reality, be your authentic self and take action steps. And then this expired program, you were newer in your market. You needed to get listings fast. And you took what appeared to be a weakness. You didn't want to call people, which I think that is a strength. And you made it a strength. Because first of all, anytime you do high-end anything, the best way to get them to run away from them is to chase them by calling them along with the 50 other people. 50 is a low number, 100 other agents in Atlanta anyway, calling them every morning to try to pick up the listing. So you step back, and in learning from reality, the other thing was you put yourself in your client's shoes or your prospect's shoes. What are they experiencing? What's important to them? All of those things. And then you put in place an action steps that cater to your strengths, which is making lists, obviously, and being super detailed and organized, and then lay that out to your prospects and ideal clients to then win that business. How do you find a time to put together three different 45-point prospecting programs for three different specialized kinds of properties? I mean, I kind of went off to the side, but this is kind of relevant because we're going to make lists and come out of like everybody, whether it's you're in a good or bad time, this is good stuff. But like you've got
this
to set
aside. This is actually great stuff, Carrie,
yeah.
Because if we go into any shifting market, what's the thing that's going to increase? The number of expired listings.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah, so I am excited for a shifting market because I think we're going to get even more market share. So first, to start with, I started with the big chunk, which was a single action plan. Then I broke that into two action plans. I broke it into the under a million properties and the over a million properties, because I realized if I was coming at in our market, a million is already getting up into like the top 5%, maybe top 8%. So mm-hmm. a million and up is a pretty pricey property here. I know it's not in other markets, but it is here.
Right.
So I realized I needed to separate the content. So for the people, say, under a million, I took out the talk about luxury and I just spoke about properties and I just made it more accessible to the everyday person. The language, the imagery. I didn't send a huge fat package on the first day. I sent like a 4-page package on the first day. And then for the over a million, everything was much more about, and also on the under a million, I mostly spoke about local things that we do. Over a million, I spoke about the national and international things we do. I use my luxury listings from the past for my imagery. I spoke a lot about luxury and the way we reach the luxury client outside of Northeast Florida. So that was generation one, was just one package. Generation two was over and under a million. And then generation three, and right now, is the same basic content, but mostly changing up the imagery. And then sprinkling in the words about historic, what's my historic background and how that's going to benefit them for getting the most the market will bear. What's my equestrian background and how's that going to get them the most the market will bear? Because they all, I've chosen to really niche myself. It's very useful in getting business because now you can really compete on something. You're not just, when you're just selling generic property price point, generic property style, it's very hard to distinguish yourself from everybody else. And then so people now, start to try to come at you about price.
I want to slow down because this is good stuff and chunk this for everybody. So number one, we talked about this list making and getting your reality. Number two, that'll be in the show notes. But number two, we're talking about in your list making, you start big, you start with the big stuff and then you narrow down quarter. The big, like here's the big list. Okay, now we got to go under a million, over a million. Here's how do we categorize it. This is more personable. This is more intricate, more talk lug. And it's, a lot of it's use of words and imagery. And then under the umbrella of the luxury, you're breaking that down to the, your niches, which are the, what is it? Historical boutique or historical property boutique.
Historic equestrian boutique
historic
commercial.
Equestrian and boutique commercial. And then you're, so it's not that, it's not like six different projects. It's one that you keep continue to break down. That's awesome. So that's wrapped up in a bow because I want everybody to really catch that and not miss your next message. And your next message is...
And that's a four-year, I want to say that's a four-year evolution. You know, if I would have, when I first started to do this, if I was to tell myself back then, okay, you need to have plus and minus a million historic, plus and minus a million equestrian, plus and minus a million boutique commercial, I would have never started. You've got to, you can't have analysis paralysis either. You've got to focus, create the thing, whatever that thing is. If it's your weight loss program, if it's your financial management program, you've got to get the basic nuts and bolts, the foundation done, get that going. And then you can go to generation two, get that resolved. And then you can go to generation three, you know, but don't get so hung up. And I see it in real estate all the time. People get hung up the best, most awesome website and then they never launch. Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't,
that's great advice. So you said four layers and then I want to get into the niche topic as well. But on the four layers, you talked about layer one is just your one big plan. Like keep it simple. Just we're going to do it. We're going to contact. Let's just, in your story and everybody like frame this into what your goals are and what you want to break into or break out of or both. But in yours, it was, I have no experience. I need to get business. So what's reality? Who needs me? How can I appeal to them? And how can I do it quickly? Which is a mailing campaign that's appealing and compelling by using a little empathy in your marketing to expired. That's it. That was it. Very simple. And then you continue to improve and grow. And before you know it, you've got this beautiful, intricate program, which by the way, you I think you still sell that. So we'll get more information on that as well. Also, in addition to that, you do that in four layers. Number one is the basic. Number two was the two different plans. And then there's a third layer of here's the niches. And then what was the fourth layer? Because I think you said it was four layers.
So the fourth layer is probably what we're doing right now is I use Vulcan. I use Vulcan and Redex for my expired data, but Vulcan comes with something called Storyteller, which is basically like BombBomb, where you can make pre-recorded videos.
Oh, cool.
Which is awesome. So I've made a whole host of pre-recorded videos tailored to these different niches. An expired pre-recorded video, a waterfront pre-recorded video, a historic pre-recorded video. So now, you know, fourth generation is starting to pull in these really special, you know, standout things. So it's sending them these storyteller videos about, hey, I saw that your equestrian property expired today or whenever. You know, that's my specialty, you know, helping sell equestrian expired. Imagine if it, for the most part, almost every equestrian property seller that I've dealt with anywhere in Florida, because I also specialize in that in South Florida, their first agent was almost always just a regular agent, right? And then they realized their friend, whatever, but they don't know enough about equestrian real estate, which is very much of a niche.
Yeah.
Talking about stall sizes and arena sizes and blah, blah,
and
blah.
And footing and wash racks and hot and cold water, right, and size of arena. And is it round or flat? I'm sorry. Like, I know that, but like, I know it so well and I don't apply it, but like, that was why I got it. This interview isn't for me, but I'm like bringing it home with you. Go ahead.
So imagine your equestrian listing has now just expired. You were so frustrated the whole time because you realized that your agent was not knowledgeable enough about equestrian real estate to be able to sell those points to the buyers. And then the morning it expires, you get an email with a video from an agent saying, I'm an equestrian expired listing specialist.
Well, not only that, but they didn't know it was because this is truly, like you tell me, I think a lot of sellers don't know that it wasn't that the agent didn't know. They don't know what it is, which is why they're even more frustrated. So when they see that message, they're like, that's what it is. It's like an epiphany.
Right.
I'm just saying. So anyway.
Right.
Y'all can quote me on that. Y'all, and I'm just saying, go for it. Anyway, authenticity, right? I love it, but keep going. Or were you, because I have something else to add. Yeah.
Okay. So we did that. I'm also implementing in some special other little things, some fun stuff. And then what I'm doing now is, I've culled through, I have probably since I started in 2015, about 500 expired properties that never sold, may or may not have relisted, may or may not have relisted with me, but didn't sell. So that person still owns the property. So now I'm starting an every 2 week, basically just listed, just sold campaign, office concierge campaign to those specific sellers. Again, historic equestrian boutique commercial. So now they received all that stuff from me. They didn't sell, they didn't relist, they're feeling frustrated. And now they start to receive that basically they're in a forever now postcard campaign of just listed, just sold specific to their property type. So that's phase four.
Okay. So that's awesome. Again, I just keep going like, how do you have the time? Obviously, you have the talent. And when you have the talent, you find the time.
Well, remember, Jerry, I'm single and I don't have any kids at home anymore. So that's a big difference. You know, when people have people at home that they're also caring for and they're also being present for, that's a different situation than when you're single and just have a lot of time.
Are you just trying to make me feel better? I'm giving you a hard time. So this also goes into, so that's the four layers, which is like, once you're good at something, like, don't be afraid to be bad at it and just be willing to be bad. Just listen to my first podcast, everybody. Okay. But, and the momentum builds and it's amazing how much happens once you, and I think you need to be more than just, you got to do it because there's something in it beyond, you know, money's great. We all need it. Believe me, I love it. But it really comes from being good at something. It really comes from passion. That's where the money ends up coming every time anyway. And on that, like going into something you brought up earlier was, I think a lot of people, I say a lot of people, like not me, just everybody else, but me too. You come into this business. I mean, I can't believe it's been whatever, 16 or something years now, but we come into this business. We just want and a lot of the training and the mindset out there in general is just get what you can. Just work your sphere, work for your friends. And that's, you're getting all the business of the people who hired their friend and got frustrated because the friend, they never validated for themselves. The friend might have been just fine and great, but they were hired as being a friend. And that in itself is a recipe for disaster. So going in and knowing what you're good at, get not just, everybody thinks it cuts out your potential business and it does anything but that. So instead of going on, give us exactly what I'm talking about and your examples and how, you know, doing the niche, specializing, because so many people just don't buy it. They're like, I don't buy that. I'm going to lose too much business if I do that, which, okay, fine, but you're going to lose
too much. To niche yourself?
Yeah. I mean, have you not heard that?
Greatest thing in the
world. My key to success was I got so niched, like it was scary, but that's what blew my business up. And it made
niching is the best thing in the world. If you get into, and I have three niches. It's not like I just have one.
Yeah.
I did make that mistake when I first started. I was only doing equestrian real estate in South Florida. And then the big crash happened. And most of those people didn't have to sell when the market crashed. So I ended up with a ton of inventory that wasn't selling. And I had to reinvent myself. So that's why now I have a foot in three different markets. And also these niches are niches that have high end and low end. You know, I have some equestrian properties that are $600,000 or $700,000. I have some equestrian properties almost 3 million. Same thing with historic. I can have a $200,000 or $300,000 historic property and I can have a multi-million dollar historic property. I've done that specifically because since I went through that last recession, I wanted these niches to have price point ranges so that it's and when the market shifts, I can kind of go up and down or I can have a combination, but I'm not stuck just in a property type that doesn't sell much during a recession. So let me just give you five reasons why being in a niche is so amazing. When you are working a niche, whether it's waterfront properties or golf properties or beachfront properties or historic or equestrian, whatever it is, townhomes, penthouses, the people that are buying that niche property are normally passionate about whatever type of property that is, historic, equestrian, that's their passion. So when they deal with a real estate professional who shares that passion enough, you already have an instant bond as opposed to they're very passionate about this and the real estate professional coming to their place doesn't get the fact that they have this dressage arena, you know, specific to dressage competition arena size. They don't get it. They don't understand.
And is it a Grand Prix or a large or a small? Just saying.
Exactly.
Right?
I mean, exactly. So to have, right. So
and how important is the mirror? So yeah, I love that topic.
Right. All that, or if it's water.
Right.
If it's waterfront and they're wanting to know what's the draft or what is it in low tide, high tide, like they're passionate about their thing. They think that the person selling their property needs to understand that thing and convey it. So imagine if they're coming across a person who doesn't get it. So A, you have a shared passion. Two, there's just far fewer people selling that type of property. So now you're not competing with a couple thousand agents. Maybe you're competing with five agents. Maybe you're competing with three agents. So when people Google equestrian real estate specialist or historic real estate specialist or whatever, you're not competing nearly as much for online findability, for being seen as the expert, because there's far, far fewer people doing that thing that you do. Three, you're ending up much more likely to run into these people over and over and over because they're coming to open houses, they have friends with the same interests, the same thing, so you're much more likely to be referred and shared than just a generic agent. Four, your marketing can be really, really dovetailed and tailored to that thing. So you could be advertising, for example, equestrian. You could be advertising in equestrian websites, where if you're in a state that allows you to also have the buyer, you have a much more high chance of having the buyer find you as well, because you're advertising in the equestrian websites or the historic home websites where the buyers are searching. They're not just searching Zillow. They're not just searching MLS-fed things. They're searching these specialty sites. So you're much more likely to end up having both sides, if that's in your state an acceptable thing. It is in my state in Florida. And so that's how I end up having buyers and sellers for my properties a lot, because I'm doing the specialized kind of marketing directly to buyers, and the buyers are finding me. That's the fourth reason. And then the fifth reason is it's much easier to find those types of properties to target them. I can very easily search in the tax records for properties built prior to a certain year. I can very easily do a Google flyover on a map and identify which properties are equestrian properties. And for the most part, nobody else is going to the effort to target to these niches. People will easily target a neighborhood or something like that. But when you get into something more specialized, like riverfront, oceanfront, I don't know, equestrian, I fall back on that. Nobody's going to the effort to find those things to really market them. So you just shine. It's so much easier. You skyrocket your career fast forward.
Well, it's like, you know, where in the market, where is there a strong demand and lack of supply? Not just how do I get the most, because you're going to also have to compete the most and not be compelling. So your boutique commercial, that is a huge market that is way underserviced. And anyone who understands that market and can deliver on it, the people they can't find agents who understand it. The agents who get it usually do want to do deals that are too big because they're in a different kind of company with a different kind of split.
That's exactly right.
Or on the other end, the agents who would like to do it for the price point don't get it, because usually they're just selling houses and picking those deals up on the side. And if you don't have that agent that really understands what triple net lease means and how to, you know, calculate your cap rate and what cap rates mean based on what, you know, your expenses are and blah, blah, blah. Like they can't, I know just enough about it, but they can't be well represented. And a lot of agents don't know that. And the client doesn't know that until it's too late. So you can get ahead of that. Summing up your
one more thing
reasons.
I want to say on commercial boutique.
Please. Yeah.
If you're doing luxury real estate, you probably have a built-in supply of boutique commercial clients, meaning when your residential clients are luxury clients, they're very likely to be investment property owners. They're very likely to be maybe physicians who own their own physician's office or attorney's office. They're more likely to be entrepreneurs. So like you said, true 100% commercial agents don't want to mess with boutique commercial because they want the big stuff. They don't want to deal with the little stuff. And residential agents who only deal in residential, they're not equipped to dip their toe in the commercial realm. And a lot of times, another way I end up with boutique commercial is they did hire a residential agent. They didn't realize. And that agent didn't have LoopNet and CoStar. So they just put their property on, say, MLS, where most people don't search.
And they didn't know how to negotiate a deal, because I think the important thing too is getting well-versed. If you're going to go there, don't just like claim it and do it. You got to actually know it. Like is it your seat? I actually got, I think I started.
CCIM.
My CCIM. Like you go, because I did that, especially earlier in my career when I did so many land deals. That's exactly what I was doing. So you go get your CCIM, go learn this stuff, go understand the value. Otherwise you're going to, I'm all about getting uncomfortable, but I'm always say get uncomfortable, but sometimes like walk, you know, getting in, like swimming in the ocean from this country to another one is uncomfortable. And it's also a bad idea.
Right.
So anyway,
absolutely.
You know, get uncomfortable, but make sure it's like in a way that you're going to improve and grow, like get your CCIM, which Rokon, I'm going to have him give everybody a link to that. And that makes me want to revisit that. So I want to review. I mean, like, I don't know how you just pulled that out of your head. It was great. The five reasons to have a niche, everybody.
Oh, I'm not going to be able to repeat that.
Oh, I've got it. Because everybody, okay. I write it all down. It's because everybody, sure, so many people do not want, instead of realizing how much nobody wants to say no to business. And they think when they niche, they're saying no to business. what they don't realize is how much they're losing and how much they're really saying no to, whatever. But number one, it's a shared passion with your client and an instant bond or an instant connection to clients. It's less competition because there are less people doing it. It's easy referrals. I'm going to pause and share a story. Historic Brookhaven. As I broke into the luxury industry, that was it. That was my neighborhood. That's all. And that was a neighborhood, by the way. But that's all I spoke about. So when I spoke about it, there were people referring other agents' business, but I got all their historic Brookhaven business. And that's how I got into the higher market and higher price points. And I learned it and knew that market. I didn't just say, yeah, historic Brookhaven. But that was the referral component. And I've got a story, but it'll take too long to share. But instant bond, instant connection, less competition, referrals, easy referrals. Your marketing is dovetailed, easy to create, easy to target. And number five, the properties are easier to find and hone in on. So you actually, it's like Seth A. Byrne in San Diego with Sotheby's always says, go narrow and deep with your connections, with your clients, with what you do. Don't try to do all of everything and spread yourself too thin because you'll get a lot of nothing. But go narrow and deep with your connections, with your specialty, with your marketing, with whatever. And that's how you get traction and get results. So we've covered a lot. And I think we've been talking for almost an hour. So we're going to start closing out. But we've covered everybody has hard times. To get out of them is simply just an action. Just get yourself an action list and get started. And when you do that, by the way, niching is a great way to blow up your business. I don't know how we're going to title this interview, but that means that
everything but the kitchen sink.
Before I would love to do the final three. I can't remember if I was doing the final three when I last interviewed you because it's been so long.
I think you did.
We're going to do it again. But before I do that, is there anything else you want to add to those concepts?
What I did learn going through my most recent tough time was every night when I went to sleep and every morning when I woke up, I told myself two things. I told myself, be kind to yourself, because I was beating myself up like over and over and over about everything. And that's not a good headspace to be in. So I told myself, be kind to yourself. And it actually works when you tell yourself. But I did it morning and night. I still do. And I also told myself, just keep going. Because, Jerry, I swear, in my whole life, I have had so many things bad happen, like really bad. And so many times I thought I couldn't keep going. So many times I didn't know how I was going to pay the next bill. So many times I didn't know when I was going to get the next closing. So many times, I mean, everything. I don't know how, but, you know. Whatever it is, God, the universe, I mean, I believe in God, but God, the universe, unicorns, whatever it is, never did the really bad thing happen. I just realized if I kept going, if I kept plugging along, and if that meant all I could muster that day was a 6 or 8 hour workday, but I did it and I told myself to be kind, I just kept going and somehow it always worked out. And I just kept telling myself, just keep going. And I think if they're going through a hard time, they can find their own mantra that really kind of resonates with them. I think being kind to yourself should be top of the list, but whatever it is, that really got me through a lot.
Wow. So
that's all I want to say.
I mean, like, that's good enough to close with right there, but I'm going to do the final three anyway for everybody who wants to hear it.
Okay.
Number one, what do you find has been your most fabulous, I can't live without it tool, other than your phone?
Tool.
You're great with
tool.
Real estate tool? Any kind of tool. Like some people are, for me, it's been a lunch I use to network and meet people. CRMs. I'm trying to think of some really cool ones that people have given us on the show. But it could be anything. But even if it's just a CRM or an app or something like that too. I mean, your expired program is kind of one.
Yeah, my expired program is kind of one. I would say just having a few small, I mean, this isn't a tool, but I think it's been my magic thing is just having a small group of true confidants. And sometimes those confidants are not who you think they're going to be. And sometimes the people you think they're going to be are not. But that you can tell anything, regardless how you're feeling when you're going through a really hard time. You know you can tell them, even if you only have one or two of those people in your life. Those are the people who have gotten me through. So I would say that's my, that's been my magic tool. And those people, I think they know who they are.
Oh, that's awesome. Number two, have your close people. And life, I always say, life is more about who you spend it with than anything else.
And I think it's important, Jerry, just real fast, when you're a team leader or you're a owner of a company or something, your access to those type of people gets smaller and smaller and smaller because you can't share those struggles. You have to be strong for everybody. Yeah. If you're strong for your family, you're strong for your team, you're strong for your employees. So as you go up in success, your access to those people becomes small. So don't lose those people in your life. It's super important.
Great advice. Number two, what is a book that you have found most powerful in your career and or life that you would share that we just have to?
I think The Millionaire Real Estate Agent is the Bible of real estate. I think we all should reread it every year. It's still as relevant as it was when it was written. I think that's a really great book. And my team, we read a book a month. Typically real estate related or habit related or efficiency related. And we're reading the 12-week year right now. It was perfect timing because it's the start of the year. And the 12-week year is the basic concept is if you make annual goals for yourself, it's really easy to think they're so far away that you don't need to take immediate action on them. Like, oh, I can deal with that in July or March or August.
Or just next week.
The 12-week year. Yeah, the 12-week year makes basically you're trying to make quarterly goals because when you have to achieve something in 10, 11, 12 weeks, you're going to take action now rather than that. So that's something that's we're reading it right now, but we're really excited about it.
I love that. I can't wait. I got to read that. I always say I'm going to read that one on the show. I'm really going to read that one. My favorite ones are
Audible.
Never Split the Difference, as everybody knows. And then Pitch Anything.
Yes.
Pitch Anything is brilliant. I haven't even gotten halfway through it because I'm getting so much out of it. Just, it's great. But no, always Audibles for me, but telling all my secrets. But anyway.
And I read, do Audible at 2 times.
Oh, real? Which one? The 12 week?
Put it all on. No, turn Audible on like
two times,
speed and a half or double speed.
I do like 1.5 times because 2 times I just.
Yeah, 1.5 times is good too. But one time is they're like talking like
yeah, just get it out already.
Yeah,
and then I get distracted. But then I have time between the words to think of everything I'm not doing and pause and make calls. Anyway, so the last thing is, all right, if there's one thing that you would hope we remember if we were gonna just forget everything else from this interview, what would it be?
Be kind to yourself. Don't beat yourself up when you're going through hard times. Don't compare don't compare your insides to other people's outsides. Like, just be kind to yourself and keep going. It will get better.